It's got to be perfect. It's got to be worth it. Yeah. Too many people take second best.
Hello, everybody. Good morning. We are a triplicate, as we are quite often these days, and it's just a delight to welcome Sarah
Badendach
to our little podcast. And of course, Fred, you're here as well, so welcome to you both.
Hello, hello.
Thank you for having me. Hello, hello.
Okay. I should introduce Sarah, but she's quite difficult to introduce. It's very hard. Sarah's a journalist, a book writer, mainly kind of arts-focused as a journalist, and has two books coming out quite soon on art, and is also a complete music aficionado, which is just a pleasure, and we've worked together for quite a bit. Fred and Sarah don't know each other, so I'm looking forward to their interaction, and I'm also looking for support from Sarah for Fred's song critique, which is one of my favorite pastimes.
Thanks, Tim. I'm going to take you everywhere with me so you can introduce me, because that was wildly, I think, overstated.
Okay. Fred, how's it?
I'm good, thanks. I just went for a swim and I'm still warming up. So if you hear funny noises, it's me going with my teeth rattling.
All right. So today we've done a podcast on the great breakup songs, but we haven't done a podcast on the bounce back from the breakup, which is actually a fantastic topic because it's more fun, it's more positive, and it's meaner, which is always good. But Sarah, it's your choice. Tell us about it and why you chose it. And maybe you can also tell us about your breakup bounce backs, your favorite breakup bounce back.
To be honest, it comes from being a listener of your podcast. Obviously, I've been listening to you talking about heartbreak and kissing and seduction, and I thought you two gents were sounding a bit sappy. And so I thought that the missing part of this podcast was the moment where you think, I'm over this, or I'm actually quite bitter and angry and I'm going to sing about it, which seems to be quite a common thing to happen. And maybe it says something about my musical background, or in fact my life. I immediately thought about that. But I do think that there's nothing nicer when you hit that point where you've stopped listening to your soppy tunes, crying on the couch, like weeping in the car, eating a whole pizza, as is my case. And then you switch on over to the empowering, sometimes I suppose they're girl anthems in my case, but certainly I'm sure not in yours, where you feel quite angry and there's this moment where I think things take up anger, but also in some sort of freedom and excitement, and I guess to a point some happiness.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's when the depression leaves you. It's actually really fulfilling. There's a kind of liberation about it. And that's what these songs, I think, tap into. Fred, you've never had the need to have a bounce back breakup song at your disposal, do you? No.
So I had to sort of imagine what it would be like.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Driving in your car, screaming very loudly, Fred.
Oh, I see.
All right. And of course, the tradition of breakup bounce back song goes back ages and ages. And so we're going to start with a song from quite a long time ago. It's Fred's first choice.
For I have got another girl, another girl. You're making me say that I've got nobody but you. But as from today, well, I've got somebody that's new. I ain't no fool and I don't take what I don't want, for I have got another girl, another girl. She's sweeter than all the girls and I met quite a few.
Go. It's Fred's first choice. Fred, that's the Beatles, Another Girl. That's the other thing about the breakup, right? There's the possibility of new adventures. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Why did you choose this one?
I find it actually, I was thinking when Sarah had the idea for this, and I thought, it's easy. And then I struggled to find good songs. And I even asked some people for help, and I said, do you know a good, like Fizz, the one who was in our earlier podcast? I said,
it's a Paul McCartney
song. But there was a sort of, I thought, it's a sweet, as far as these songs can be sweet. But it's not such a sweet song, because I looked it up in this book, Revolution in the Head, which was written by Ian MacDonald, and he covers every song the Beatles have ever recorded. And he writes about the music, but he also writes about the lyrics. And He said, lyrically, it may be another reflection on his, that's Paul, relationship with Jane Asher, throughout which he maintained a secret flat in London for many another girl. And then it says, then a still unreconstructed Northern male chauvinist, McCartney, expected Asher, his girlfriend, to remain at his domestic beck and call. And then they go on about she was an educated middle-class Southern girl, wished instead to pursue her acting career, and refused to be dissuaded from going on tour with the Old Vic, which is a theatre company. So it's a bit of a... And I found there lots of misogynist songs when it comes, because I've only chosen songs by men, and they're all quite nasty. And even this Another Girl, which sounds quite happy and poppy, it's got some... Yeah, and if you know the background then, you think this guy was happy with all sorts of affairs there and singing about another girl. It's not so good for Paul.
Well,
it was the nice Beatle.
and it's unfair too, because didn't he learn how to play piano at the Asher residence?
He was staying at this, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, he lived there. And they taught him a lot about arts and culture and everything. And what you get is this song that he then writes as a thank you for.
All right, shall we move on?
I remember when we broke up the first time, saying this is it, I've had enough. 'Cause like we hadn't seen each other in a month when you said you needed space. What? Then you come around again and say, baby, I miss you and I swear I'm gonna change. Trust me, remember how that lasted for a day? I say, I hate you, we break up, you call me, I love you. Ooh, 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 ooh. We called it off again last night, but ooh, 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 ooh. This time, I'm telling you, we are never, ever, ever getting back together. We are never.
All right, that was Taylor Swift with "We Are Never Ever 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 Getting Back Together." Together.
Ever.
Ever. I guess it's perhaps the song of our times in some ways. It's Taylor Swift, the world's most popular singer. Why did you like it, Sarah? Tell us about the song.
I'm actually not much of a Swiftie. I don't want to say that and then have to go into the witness protection program because I might be the only one. Me and I hazard against Fred. And in fact, I liked her earlier music, but I feel you have to have a Taylor song on a list like this when you know that she has dated a lot of well-known people and there's a sense that song is probably about one of them. There's not a lot to the lyrics, except for a line that I really like, which she says, I'm really going to miss you picking fights and me falling for it, screaming that I'm right. And you would hide away and find your peace of mind with some indie record that's much cooler than mine. And I thought, yeah, I've definitely dated time. That guy. the Sufjan Stevens album or something, just being deep and getting a cortado and not wanting to talk to me, just listen to his music. But it is amazing when you look at, of course, she's well known. Taylor's well known for potentially having sung all these songs about people that she's no longer with. And the list, of course, ranges from Harry Styles to Jake Gyllenhaal, the actor, and Tom Hiddleston, also another actor, Joe Jonas. It's Taylor Lautner, John Mayer. Where is that from?
Yeah,
apparently.
No, amazing, eh? Yeah. But she is the artist of the confessional. And I think that's what really set her apart, is she creates a kind of intimacy with her listeners. And that intimacy creates this bond, this kind of associative bond. Because what I think is interesting about Taylor Swift is actually her music is fabulous. Her lyrics are excellent. It is also middle of the road. The songs have a kind of ordinariness about them. And I don't mean that necessarily in a negative way, but her supporters are just extraordinarily, just amazingly devoted. And I think that comes from revealing her innermost self, really putting herself on the line. And that's quite a new thing, to be so vulnerable in popular music. It's interesting.
That's easy. She's so easily accessible. That's the other thing, of course. I know what it's talking to your point.
No, we tried to get her on the podcast, but she didn't respond yet.
So shocking.
It's not, not so easy. It's
extraordinary.
It seems like she's been busy, guys. Yeah.
Tim wrote this beautiful story about her saying
I did
she'll decide
it.
The American elections.
Yeah. Tim, I have to say, I mean, I think that was a fab piece. I don't think she's going to decide the American elections.
She's got 300 million followers on Instagram. It's going to have an effect, surely. You know.
Yep. How many are American?
Yeah, most of them are. But it is, of course, this is very timely. We're talking just after the first Trump-Kamala debate, and immediately after the debate, Taylor Swift endorsed Kamala Harris, which, anyway, I thought it was very interesting. Mm. And anyways, can we move on?
No, I want to know from Sarah about Taylor. Why you like her so much?
Well, I think I liked her earlier stuff. I think I liked the possibly slightly more country-esque early stuff of hers.
Oh, did you? Before the lockdown records. Okay.
Yeah. I like that.
Like
she,
the Red and all that.
Yeah, even before, this is off Red. So
even
that
before,
song is off Red.
Okay.
Yeah, I like the early stuff, like the teen Taylor. But I do think I like that she's got a bit of chutzpah and she went and re-recorded all her albums. And amazingly, I'm 41 and I know so many people who have gone to those concerts this last summer overseas. So many South Africans who of my age who have traveled to Europe, to America, to the UK to watch her in concert and not with their children. And I think that's a really interesting thing. That kind of like universal appeal of her is, I suppose, talking to your point, is amazing.
And it's also quite astonishing.
I like that she posted herself holding her cat when she announced that she was backing Kamala.
It's a cat woman.
and of course, didn't much like Elon's response.
No.
What did he say? I missed it.
He was creepy. It's just creepy.
He said he'd give her a baby and fiercely look after her cats, to misquote him. But basically, I read a very funny article where they said, of course, the creepy thing is, of course, that he is going to have a baby with her, or in fact, just give her one of his children, which made me laugh.
Fred and I have discussed Taylor Swift before, and both of us agreed that we didn't really take notice of her until she started her kind of lockdown interaction with The National. And we thought, okay, if she's keen on The National, maybe we better have another look.
Endorsed by The National,
I'm just an early adopter.
What I find fascinating is that she manages to write how many albums now? All about dating, breakups, romance. It's astonishing because the subject seems to be quite limited, but she manages to make it enormous.
She's had a lot of them.
I was going to say, you're a prolific dater, as in fact, I think is the way of many people in this modern
serial
world.
Serial dating, yes.
Yeah, it's quite easy.
I like her attitude. I think she's a clever pop singer. I'm not so keen on her voice. I wouldn't recognize it. She's an okay singer, but she doesn't have a very recognizable voice. But I like her as a phenomenon. And she's smart, she's clever. And she writes, I like the put-downs she writes about those guys she used to date.
Yeah.
And it's good to hear it from her. Because I was thinking when I chose these songs, they're all male songs. And I was hoping, I hadn't seen your list yet, Sarah, that you would come with some female perspective, which you did.
To be honest, mine was almost all women. And then I thought, am I coming across as the crazy single cat lady?
Crazy cat lady.
So I haven't done that. But it is very easy to counteract the male rhetoric with a lot of embittered ladies singing.
I wanted to choose one of the songs you chose, but I thought, I'm pretty sure you'll choose it. So I left that one.
Okay, I have to say, just while we're on that topic, Fred, I never know any of the music you choose, and I feel shockingly middle of the road every time I listen to your podcast. So that is a triumph for me that we may have almost chosen the same song.
Okay, Tim, yours.
Good for you, I guess you moved on really easily. You found a new girl and it only took a couple weeks. Remember when you said that you wanted to give me the world? Good for you, I guess that you've been working on yourself. I guess the therapist I found for you should really help. Now you can be a better man for your brand new girl.
I'm
Well, so this is, I don't know whether you would say this is the mirror image of Taylor Swift or whether it's the same image. It's Good For You by Olivia Rodrigo. I just love her. I think she is Taylor Swift taken up a notch. She both sings louder and harder and faster. Her lyrics are meaner and sharper. She's too much fun. You can bop to her. And she's really good lyrically. I just love that line of that therapist I found for you obviously helped. And now you can have a relationship with a new person. And the Good For You is so dripping with irony. And anyway, they are slightly in the same mold. And in some ways, that's why I chose
that. Whenever I hear her voice at the start of one of her songs, she sounds like Lord, the New Zealand singer. But then, of course, she immediately segues into her kind of fab angriness, and then I know it's her.
And the interesting thing is, of course, that Taylor Swift and Olivia Rodrigo were Instagramming with each other in their early careers and having fun and supporting each other and that sort of stuff. And now they're slightly at odds with each other because they're slightly in the same lane. It's a race, if it is a race, that Taylor Swift is winning, but clearly...
Apparently she also wrote songs about that, didn't she, Olivia?
Yeah, she did.
Yeah. Right. But what I like about these new pop stars, she's what, 20-something?
Yeah, exactly.
They now endorse old pop stars, like Olivia Rodrigo is a big fan of the Breeders. That band that came after the Pixies with Kim Deal. And she gives them so much publicity that the Breeders have started a new career again, which is,
oh, really?
I like it. It's the other way around now. And she's much more punky than Taylor Swift in her punk pop a lot of the time.
Yeah. No, yeah, you can trace the sort of musical elements, very carefully constructed in some ways, to be a little bit of pop, a little bit of disco, a little bit of punk, a little bit of, it's a kind of summation because people are listening to so many different musical formats these days.
Yeah.
And like Taylor Swift, they both use spoken word in their songs, which I think is interesting, which is in some ways a kind of reference, at least, to rap. Anyway, good fun. All right, let's move on to, now we go back in time again.
Talking to some rich folk that you know. Well, I hope you won't see me in my ragged company. For you know I could never be alone. Take me down, little Susie. Take me down.
Alrighty, Fred, Dead Flowers, the Rolling Stones. What a great song. It's just extraordinary.
We were disagreeing about it, weren't we? Whether this was a bounce back song or not.
Yeah, that's right. It's a kind of bounce back song from the perspective of the person that he's thinking about, not so much from his perspective, bouncing back by sending him flowers.
I think he's hit rock bottom and he's on his way up again.
Okay.
Perhaps. I find it so hard to imagine Mick Jagger ever having had tremendous heartbreak and hit rock bottom.
That's true. But another girl to take away the pain. That's Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
Isn't this sort of Mick Jagger par excellence? He's always thinking about somebody else.
But it might have been, I don't know who wrote the lyrics, because it's a bit like, it's a put-down song, isn't it? Even though she let him, he's trying to have a go at her the way Bob Dylan used to do in like a Rolling Stone. And it's a sort of macho, you left me and I'm down in the drain. Your day will come. That's basically what he's saying. Yeah, I think it's a great song. It's a great country song. And I do think it's a bounce-back song. They're bouncing back in the gutter, though, with the needle and the spoon.
The
ragged company, and she's having a great time, but her day will come. Her day will come.
And her day did come, and then he got married, and she got back at him by sending him dead flowers.
Dead flowers. and he put roses on her grave.
Yeah.
I always thought that was so mean, that don't forget to put roses on your grave. And I thought, wow. Does he wish her dead?
And who's he singing about?
Just stylistically, I think the song has a nice kind of lope to it. And what I've always liked about it in some ways is the image of the dead flowers is great, but the really good thing about it is the guitar lead track, which just punctuates everything so nicely and twangs it. It's just it's a very nice rendition of classic country rock. It's just great.
The Stones were great at misogynist lyrics.
Because
I was looking, they
also had that regard.
A song called Stupid Girl. I thought that might be a bounce back song, but it wasn't. It was even, they just thought this girl was stupid. And then Neil Young also has a song called Stupid Girl. And I thought, why do all these guys write songs about stupid girls? You're just a stupid girl. I don't think you could get away with it these days.
Possibly because the stupid girl wasn't interested in them.
Yeah, or they lost interest in the stupid girl.
Yes.
It was one of the kind of downsides of 70s music. If you look quite closely into it, it is misogynistic. And you could see why the women's movement flourished during the hippie era. All right, talking about feminism.
I know the version of me.
All right, Sarah, Alanis Morissette, and You Ought to Know. Just an extraordinary sort of fighting song. You have confessionals and confessionals, and this is a very confessional.
I think in going back to looking at this song, because of course it was the immediate one that came to my mind, I thought it was important that I set the scene of when I was listening to this, because I saw that this song actually came out in June 1995, and I was 12.
I was wondering about that, yeah.
And it had come off the back. I was at, and I think this was key, I was at a convent on the West Rand of Johannesburg that had been multiracial probably for 20, 30 years. And this is like a year into the democratic South Africa. There was a heavy rotation of heavy pop and R&B, and in particular, the Boyz II Men album the year before. And so I always think of the strangeness this must have been. Of course, I grew up on like a diet of my parents' music, and then as a 12-year-old girl, a lot of that kind of poppy R&B stuff. And so this must have actually been, in hindsight, my sort of first intro to rock chick that I liked and I chose. And I can't recall how, I suppose it must have been on the radio. Thinking back on it, how I even came to know about Alanis. But interestingly enough, this is the first single of her Jagged Little Pill album. I thought it was one of the others. But this is the song that she got lucky on. And that was, I didn't know that. But I do know that I was sitting in my parents' downstairs study on the dial-up internet of the computer, listening to Alanis Morissette on heavy rotation and playing Doom on the computer, which is really hilarious when I think back on it as a 12-year-old.
The kind of acerbicness of her lyrics, even by the standards of forthright lyrics, that, you know, through the ages, was really a complete eye-opener. She just laid it all out there. And it's interesting that the effect that she's had is enormous, not least on the two people who we've already played, both Taylor Swift and
our girl
and
Taylor,
Rodrigo.
They're on stage, and Tim, you must know this, speaking about the importance for Taylor.
There's two other things that I really like about Alanis Morissette. So her song structure is just massively complicated and very varied in volume and tone, and very cleverly put together. Lots of bass, by the way. Very interesting sort of bass tracks
On that album, Dave Navarro and Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers both did guitar on that song, in fact.
Yeah,
I think it would be a crime to not mention a very important fact about this song and, in fact, that album. And that is, of course, that everyone has always said that song is about Dave Coulier, who played Uncle Joey in the sitcom Full House. And I grew up, that was like a staple of my youth, that cheesy sort of proper American moralistic sitcom. And everyone always thinks, oh, he was the good-looking person with uncle, which of course was John Stamos. He was the not good-looking, dorky, uncool uncle. And I think that's one of those stories that has gone down like in history of how can that whole album have been about that guy?
The other thing about her is that vocally, she just holds it together so convincingly. She manages to express anger and tunefulness simultaneously, which is just too much fun. Fred, are you not a fan?
No. It was the song that came to mind immediately when Sarah came with the idea. I was also convinced that one of you would choose it, and you did. So I'm glad I didn't choose it. It's a bit of a scary song, isn't it? For us men, she doesn't beat around the bush, this girl. You played it now. I must say that I thought, is this a different version? Because it sounds so much more modern than I remember it. That sort of that intro before she gets to the chorus, but I'm there to remind you, it sounds like amazing with the bass and with that feel, of course.
I did read a great thing about, of course, like the internet rankings of the world are fabulous. And someone said, someone ranked the top 10 Alanis Morissette lyrics of all time. And this was number 3. And the lyric was, does she know that you told me you'd hold me until you die, but you're still alive? And I just think that is so great.
Clever lyrics they are. Yeah. And I think it was the first time I heard a woman singing with such venom about men.
Yes.
It may have been the first time.
All right. Shall we move on?
Let's move on.
Okay. All right, this is Back in the Saddle by Aerosmith. It's not a great song of theirs, but I just like the fact that it was like rock and the lyric was absolutely apposite. And Aerosmith, in some ways, a fantastic triumph and in some ways a complete tragedy because they sound so much like the Rolling Stones and they never quite get there. But yet they're fantastically successful in their own right these days.
I love them. Always loved them. Of course, Steve Tyler, also another man who I don't think has ever had a sadness. I can't believe he
was. That's what I thought.
Just.
It even looks like Jagger.
Yes. On the kind of tragedy side of it, it's a sort of tragedy triumph. I just do imagine that you're a rock star and then you have a one-night stand with somebody and then you don't know it. But years later, the person you had a one-night stand with comes back and introduces her daughter, who is now an international film star and is out-earning you 40-1 as a teenager. Of course, that's Liv Tyler. And when you put them side by side, it's very obvious that they are...
She's gorgeous, daughter, isn't she?
And she's gorgeous. Yeah, exactly.
Of course, that's happened this very week. Of course, Dave Grohl this week said that he's just... had a baby out of wedlock with someone else. So that's a fresh, repetitive story.
Dave Grohl, Nirvana, the Foo Fighters.
Yeah. This week announced that, I guess he had to put out a statement to say he has a new child and it's not with his wife.
And is his new child one of the lead actors in a blockbuster
about a gigantic thing hurtling towards Earth that you also happen to sing a very successful song for?
Okay.
How old is the child?
I think it's a baby. I think it's like
newish. Oh, it's still a baby. Okay.
Newish, not a little like addition to the...
So this, he was naughty while on tour or something.
Yeah.
That's a rock star life. I never really liked Aerosmith, Tim.
Okay, good to hear.
And I don't know why. And I don't find them sounding like the Stones either. I always thought, what is it with this band? Because I was supposed to like them. Because I grew up in that era, 70s, which is when they started. And they had a few nice songs, but it never worked for me. They were too American, I think.
Okay. Yeah, the songs are not as well put together as a lot of the kind of like heavier rock songs. I don't know what your ranking would be, but AC/DC must be up there, and of course the Stones. They did sound like the Stones. They were more very deliberately like the Stones in the early days, and they grew away from them. But this song, I've listened to it a whole bunch of times before this podcast, and you really, it grows on you. They grow on you. That's just, it is a surprise.
I like the one they did with Run DMC, the Walk This Way. I thought that worked very well.
Yeah. Okay, Fred, anyway. So here's your next choice. Okay, that's The Damned, The New Rose. What a great song. I absolutely love this song. I don't know why it never came to mind, but Fred, tell us about it.
I'm not entirely sure if it's a bounce back song. It's New Rose implies that there was an old rose and now he's happy because he found his new rose. And also, you didn't hear it, maybe we will, when you played it, but it starts with the guy saying, is she really going out with him? And then you get those drums pounding. I always thought that was quite a good little addition to that song. But he later, the one who wrote it, Brian James, the guitarist, said it was about the punk movement. And the New Rose was the punk movement, and it gave him such excitement, which I don't really believe. Because, I mean, he refers to a she every now and then. I got a New Rose, I got her good. I guess a New Rose, good, good. And also, like, you know, if you have overcome that breakup, which of course I've never had, so I don't know what it's like, but I could imagine that you write a song like this because it's loud, it's in your face, it's quite exuberant, it's not depressed, it's not bitter. Because I thought The Beatles, Another Girl was quite a bitter song. It was a stab at the old girlfriend. This has got no stabbing to anyone, except that it's a new rose and he's incredibly happy with it. And it was also the first British punk song ever recorded and released. So it's also an historical song. It came out in the late 1976, before the Sex Pistols came with the Anarchy in the UK. So there we are.
And tell us a bit about The Damned. Where did they fit into the punk genre?
They were one, together with The Clash and the Sex Pistols, they were the first of the first wave of British punk bands. The Pistols were nihilistic and The Clash were more political, and The Damned were all into fun. So they weren't taking as seriously at the time as The Pistols and The Clash, but the music was really good. And they had that singer, Dave Vanian, who looked like Count Dracula. And then they had a drummer called Red Scabies and a bassist called Captain Sensible, which shows that they weren't called Johnny Rotten or Sid Vicious. And they were the first with everything. They were the first to record a single, the first to release an LP, the first band to split, and the first band to reunite again and release another whole career with Captain Sensible then on lead guitar instead of Brian James. And I saw them twice in Rotterdam, and they are so good live because they were good musicians. They had quite a career already of playing in bands, and they were loud, they were fast, they had good tunes, they had good choruses that you could shout along. They were just an excellent band. They still go around now, apparently. They're still gigging and finally making some money on their old fame. And good to them.
No, exactly.
I think they're fantastic. That's fab.
Yeah, they're great. I love the guitar sound as well. That's distorted. It sounds like a motorbike or something. It's like the perfect guitar sound.
You can always tell a band is made up of good musicians if they play fast and accurately. And really, they deliver that so well, though. The bass and the guitar moving, what's this, 170 beats a minute or something? Really, and they set that style for punk, maybe, I think, I would guess. Fred, you'd probably know better than me.
No, they did. Them and the Ramones were the first to use that kind of sound and short songs that were still listenable. It's not like noise. There's a bit of structure, and even there's a middle eight in this song. And I liked, it's like the sort of excitement of the song that says, I've overcome this old girl and this old breakup and this old love, and I'm ready for something new. And I thought it's nice because it's not a bitter song. Whereas Alanis Morissette is quite bitter.
She'd been wronged by a kind of middly, averagely successful sitcom star. <Yeah. laughs>
Isn't the intro, that little intro bit that you were talking about, a reference to a very old rock and roll song?
Leader of the Pack,
that's right. Leader of the Pack.
It's immediately what I thought.
It was a bit of a joke.
Then Joe Jackson made a whole song called Is She Really Going Out With Him?
Yeah, no, exactly. That's right. All right, from the damned to the person who is damned.
Wasn't enough. I'm like, fuck you and I fuck her too. Said if I was richer, I'd still be with her. No, ain't that some shit?
Ain't that some shit?
And although that's pain in my chest, I still wish you the best. But the fuck you. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, I can't afford a Ferrari, but that don't mean I can't get you there. I guess she's an Xbox.
All right, so that's CeeLo, fuck you. This song just makes you smile, doesn't it? It's so funny. Yeah.
I just think there's some fantastic lyrics in that song. He says, you're an Xbox and I'm more Atari. I mean, like, who could put a line like that into a song? I was listening to that song earlier in my car, and you just got to put that up loud and go for it. But it's an interesting song. CeeLo Green is not a one-hit wonder, but he is not a person who's had a lot of success. And of course, he was one half of Gnarls Barkley, that group with Danger Mouse, who had that hit Crazy. And I didn't realize that he'd also contributed a lot to Outkast. But this is certainly his most famous song. And then he went on to be a voice coach on The Voice. But no surprise to anyone, this he co-wrote with Bruno Mars. You can hear it.
Right.
But I did see Bruno Mars say, there's only one man who could couch a song in happiness and like Motown Sunshine with a big, whilst giving you the big middle finger. And I think that's what this is. It's fab.
It's incredible because, as you say, with that kind of Motown sparkly sunshine going on in the background, and if it was a
Motown
song,
you'd
be talking about your love with your lover and your loving.
And an interesting thing is the obviously very successful series Glee, the TV series, which was about a Glee club in an American school. They used to cover all these songs, and Gwyneth Paltrow was a guest star on that, and she played the stand-in Spanish teacher, the relief teacher, and she sings a cover of the song. Obviously, the radio edit's called Forget You, and she does a cover of the song, which is astoundingly good. And I have to say, it was just like another reminder of why she's irritating, because, in fact, she's really just good at everything.
Yes. What do you think?
I didn't know this artist at all. But then I see he's from Atlanta, and I've just looked him up. And he worked, as you said, with Outkast and some of the other, Goody Mob as well. Oh, he was a member of Goody Mob.
Yeah.
Who I do know. I didn't know him. Now, I think it's a fantastic song, and it's in your face and clever, and it's got I like always the contrast, like a sunny beat and bitter lyrics, or the other way around. And that works very well here, happily shouting, fuck you. So, yeah, it certainly does it for me.
It's interesting. It's one of those things about expletives, because they're very flexible, because they're aggregated words, right? There's fuck you, and there's a whole sort of kind of variety. And even though it is a contrast to have fuck you and the sort of sunny Motown in the background, in a funny way, it works, because he's saying fuck you in a funny sort of way. It's much less sure. jarring than you might imagine.
Tim, at that sort of towards the end of the song, and people who listen to the whole thing, and I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with this, there's a bit of the song where he cries. He goes, why? Yeah. But it's still in a kind of upbeat fashion. And it really works.
It's also, it's very common in America to say fuck you. It's like almost normal language. You won't get beaten up if you tell somebody fuck you. They'll say fuck you too, and then fuck you too. And
it's interesting, of course, it is much more impactful when you listen to the original fuck you, but there is a much more widely played radio edit, which is forget you.
Yeah.
Because I suppose they had to make it for family consumption.
Yes. Just on our theme, it does really fit incredibly well, because in the bounce back phase, you are all about fuck you. It totally encapsulates the feeling.
Sums it up.
After you've got through the depression, then you are thinking this and nothing else.
Yeah. And I suppose the thing is, can you just imagine with the lyrics, that's being in California and seeing your ex driving down the road in a Ferrari with this clearly much more kind of economically viable man or whoever it is, and feeling quite irritated.
Yeah. It's funny how they all refer to that, to the wife or the woman or the girlfriend who then gets a richer or more glamorous partner, because it's in that Stone song as well, and it's in this song. And I think it might be in the Alanis Morissette song as well. There's upscale breakup for the other side, and you're stuck there down at the bottom.
Yes,
some poor other person's also in the song forever, of course.
Yes, that's right. And it's also very explicitly and good for you as well. Yeah. Last song. This is my choice. Okay, that's the very famous, well-known I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor. Perhaps not the greatest song in the world, but I just thought it deserved a space here, because it's known as such an iconic song to reinforce yourself, not only after a breakup, but also from a breakup.
I know, it's just an anthem of resilience.
Exactly,
it's also not a song you ever want to hear at a party, because it's at a dance party, because it's actually incredibly long.
Yes.
Or at a karaoke, because everyone starts off really enthusiastically, and then there's that moment where they realize, oh no, it's going to go on.
It's got that very long middle part where they go to that.
Yeah. How long is it actually?
It's not that long, is it?
I think it is surprisingly long.
I'm sure there's a 12-inch version that's five times as long.
Yeah, you got to survive the song, never mind anything else. Yeah.
How did this become a gay anthem? Do we know, Tim? How did this become a gay anthem?
Actually, I don't know that. I don't know. It's about resilience and disco. And
Disco, of course, was, Did it feature in that film?
Priscilla, Queen of
Priscilla, yeah. Did it feature in there?
I never saw it. But it is very explicitly a dance track. And, of course, it's a disco track. And it has that, it has the kind of iconic just go, which also, I think, contributes to the fact that people get bored dancing to it, because it is so monotonous. It's the song that both made disco in some ways, I think, and broke disco, because it just became the song that's so well known. It was incredibly catchy, but it also leaves you quite fast, I think.
I'm afraid the answer is yes. It did appear in Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yeah.
It is on the soundtrack.
And I got the answer to your question. So there are three versions. The single version was 3:15. The album version 4:56. And the 12-inch version was 8 minutes.
That's the one. So, that's the danger.
Yes, it probably was.
I always thought that it was the song that the DJ put on when they wanted to go and have a sort of quiet drink at the bar. They knew it was popular. And
did she make anything else, Gloria Gaynor?
No. That,
I don't know.
Some, but nothing even close to this in popularity. And she's easy to confuse with the other disco queens of the era, yeah, like Diana Ross, who
maybe also seems to me that she did a lot of covers subsequent to that.
Yeah.
Eye of the Tiger and I Am What I Am and Can't Take My Eyes Off You. Obviously, disco, yeah, disco.
And in some ways, this was a bit of a cover too, because it was co-written with Dino Varakis from Rare Earth. And the interesting thing about Dino, of course, was that he was fired from Motown.
Yeah. Sweet Revenge.
Sweet Revenge. Yeah, that's right. Another kind of breakup victory. All right, people. Let's get down to it.
We're going to vote.
We're going to vote. Okay.
I know which one I want to win.
Okay, who do you want to win?
I think this, what's his face? CeeLo Green is by far the best.
Me too. I think it's just throwaway the best song.
Could this be a unanimous vote?
The first one it would be, yeah.
Yeah, because I've been listening to it all week, and it actually can fix my mood, and I feel that that's
yeah, that's the criteria.
But I like it's in your face, and it's bouncy, and it's funny, and it's clever, and it's danceable. It's got the exuberance. Most of them did actually, except maybe that Flowers. But most songs were quite upbeat, weren't they? That we chose.
Even the Beatles Flowers song was
another girl.
Yeah. All right. That's easily done. And it's so nice that we tripped up on it as we were discussing all of the songs on how it really fitted into the theme.
I feel victorious and it's magic.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Guys, I can't help having exceptionally fine taste in music.
But I also liked, because sometimes we are a bit stuck in the 70s and 80s and 60s, you brought some new voices in the program. Which is really nice.
Me too.
Oh, thank you.
Oddly enough, Fred and I haven't moved on from music from the 1970s. But listen, thanks a million for joining us. It was too much fun and a great topic.
Great guest.
And
thanks, guys.
We're
it's great
thrilled
fun
to have you. All right. And Fred, next week is my choice. And
your choice.
How does this sound to you? Great songs to play air guitar. The perfect song for air guitar.
Sounds great. At least we can go back to the 70s.
Yeah, we can safely go back to the 70s. Or the perfect song for Mondegreens. You prefer that?
Either of those guys are so good. Both of them are magic.
let's do air guitar.
Let's go do air guitar. All right.
I'm so looking forward to hear what everyone wants you to come up with for that.
Okay. It might be slightly inevitable.
That was me, Fred De Vries, and Tim Cohen with another episode of The Perfect Song For. Thank you so much for listening.
And don't forget, you can find us on X and on Instagram under the obvious designations.
And if you have any spare money, we do have a Patreon account, which is patreon.com/theperfectsongfor.
And you can hear the full tracks on Spotify. Please do search for the topic rather than The Perfect Song For or some other variation of that.
And if you have any comments, suggestions, praise, or criticism, you can write to us at perfectsongfor@gmail.com.
Cool. And do look out for our next pod in a fortnight's time. All right, let's play out with CeeLo Green.
Wasn't enough. I'm like, fuck you, and I fuck her too. Said if I was richer, I'd still be with her. Now ain't that some shit? It all.